Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The average American will meet 10,000 people in their lifetime.
I was handcuffed to another man from another tribe whose language I did not speak.
Don't think, feel.
But if every one of you changed the lives of just 10 people, and each one of those people changed the lives of another 10 people, and another 10.
We did not know each other, and we could not speak to each other, because if we could have spoken to each other, we might have been able to figure out what was happening to us.
To every politician who was taking donations from the NRA, shame on you.
I believed them when they said they were sleeping on concrete floors. I believed them. Children being separated from their parents.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a pop-up episode of Public Access America. That was a hell of a lot of peas to begin the show. I'm here with my co-host from Inspirations Beyond Disabilities, Jay. You can find him, the Baritone Blurred, on TikTok and Instagram, Baritone Blurred on Twitter, and I'm not quite sure what you are on YouTube. But if you go to Inspirations Beyond Disabilities page on the bottom, you can find all of the hosts and connect with them there.
Hey, thank you for having me, Jason.
Oh, no problem. I'm so excited. We on Inspirations Beyond Disabilities, we tend to have long form conversations that bring about compassion, understanding, and empathy. And you and Dave and all of the cast really open up honestly and about everything from disability to just being a human. And I think that is really cool. Are you surprised that it's come together the way it has?
Yes and no. For this is kind of right time, right place, right people, mainly because we got an opportunity. First off, like, you know, we have that our personal conversations, off this show. And I think that's where kind of the chemistry built, where you get to learn a little bit about each other. So that way, when you're on the air, it's kind of like you're just continuing the chat that you were already having before the show. And I think that that's really good. Secondly, because of the space we're in, all of us are members of Blind Talk, and we're all sharing in some form or another, to some extent or another, our personal lives. So it's just kind of becomes easy to kind of like, you already kind of know the person before you got into the chat. And now you're in the chat and you get to know the person even more, so that when you go live, it's already like you're not live with co-hosts, you're live with friends. So that makes the conversation a bit easier.
Right. I don't know if general people would know, but like TikTok has like subcategories, and there's a group of creators that are visually impaired. They're called VIPs, Blind Talk. I call it being blind 2021. We all have our little hashtags and stuff, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And it's interesting the way TikTok shares people with you. If you like a certain kind of creator, it'll show you more and more and more. And honestly, Jay, like, I see the same questions answered by the same 10 people every 4 videos. And so for me, it was more like there's a story there and they're just on the tip of it, but we got to get it opened up, because I've been trying to explain on the show every once in a while, like, we're the first generation to be able to stand up and talk about disabilities the way we are, in a way that our generations before haven't. And you really grasped onto that, which is really exciting to me. So I wanted everybody to open up with these same dumbass questions. Like, you have this thing, stupid things people say to blind people, you know? And I thought, wow, if we just get a few of those every episode, people are going to listen like crazy. But it became more than that. Like, I didn't expect it to be as open and honest as it is, you know?
I think that's the only way, because let's face it, not taking a knock at anybody, but I've heard other blind podcasts or even other disabled podcasts where all they do is scratch the surface. They're very cagey about their situations. They're very, and I understand the internet can be a scary place, but to be honest, if you want to actually make change or actually bring people in, you have to be able to have a very honest conversation. And if the hosts aren't willing to be transparent to an extent, like, I'm not saying you have to go out there and put your social security number out there at the very first episode, but like, you, if you don't become at least to a degree transparent, then after a while, no one's going to want to listen to vague conversations or vague situations. Like in my videos, I add my wife and I add my kids because I want people to see not just like, hey, here's my family here. See, we can get married, but like, no, we can function. And here's the proof. We can do these things. Here's the proof. If you talk about things with mental health, hey, let's talk about the things, not just like in broad scopes, like, hey, mental health is an issue. We need to talk about it. Mm-hmm. But like, hey, here's what I dealt with personally with mental health. Like, these are the challenges I've faced. And when people, I get a lot of people, I put in the chat once, I started getting to a video, one of the episodes, I clipped out a scene or two. And people were like, oh my God, I've never related to this so much. Like, I didn't think anybody else talked about this. If you live in a world where you're the only visually impaired person, mm-hmm. and you don't know anybody else, and you don't have an opportunity to interact with other people, then this is kind of the beacon shot up. Like, hey, you're not alone. We're over here. You can find us over here, you know?
Right.
So I think it's beneficial. I think it's really, really good.
What's amazing to me is coming out tomorrow. Coming out tomorrow, we have an episode, a pop-up episode that Ezric and you did with Marie Zuknone.
Yeah.
And right in the middle of that, I realized like you and I are the older generation mentors that she said she looked up to. And here we are talking to her. And what she does is she goes ahead and talks to younger blind people than her. Yeah. Like she's in her early 20s. Ezric is in his early 20s. And it's almost like this daisy chain of, and I want to be more cautious of my language on the show because we're passing something down. And not only that, I think younger people are looking up to hear the conversation. And I can't wait to find out how they twist it.
Yeah.
How somebody younger than us twists it and says, those old people, they don't know what they're talking about. They're so outdated. I can't wait till we're outdated, Jay. And there's a new generation.
And there's a new generation talking. Yeah. Yeah. They're going to be a more bolder generation than we are. So this is like, this is kind of, so the generation before us, though, those that were dealing with this in silence had to at least, you know, crawl so that we could, so that we could kind of walk so that the next generation after us could run. So I can't wait to see them run and see what they do with it because they're going to be more outspoken than we are. And I'm hoping they even take it steps further than we do because right now we're having the conversation, but the conversation has to turn into action at some point or another. And that's what I'm looking forward to.
That my issue is that like there's 49 million disabled people in America, but it's a scattershot of disabilities.
Yeah.
I mean, there's 45 million African-American people in the country, but that's not scattershot, you know, it's men and women and children, but they're basically able to coalesce.
Right.
It's hard for disabled people to coalesce, I think, without wanting it. There's so much to want, you know, there's so many things from an outside perspective. It looks like 49 million people want 49 million things. That's not what it is. We just want to be equal. And those things are easy to do on a case-by-case basis by the people involved in the situation, right? I don't need Joe Biden to build me a ramp. What I need is the building owner to maybe consider painting blocks yellow so I don't trip over them.
Right. That completely makes sense. The hard thing is that it's from what I'm starting to see, it's cheaper to ignore us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what it's become. It's become a thing now where it's just like, it costs us too much money to meet, I mean, we talked about this a few episodes, to meet a reasonable accommodation.
Right.
Therefore, I will ignore you until I am forced to actually make some type of change.
Yeah, I think there's the stereotype that we get everything for free. So if they're to give us something, the polls would say that's a negative.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like all the other Americans seem to think that we have it on easy street.
Yeah.
And if Joe Biden was to like give us extra money in our checks, they would hate that. But they're all getting it and we're not.
Well, I'll tell you this. If what the video you shared with me the other day, the student loan forgiveness, if that's true for disabled, it is going to be screaming bloody murder in the streets for a while because that's going to be like, oh, well, you guys got it further easy. No, what it means is that for my $92,000 that I owe, and for the less than $1,000 I get a month, it just means that I can actually live and actually afford to do something with my credit instead of having to spend the majority of that on paying off a student loan for a job I can't get because no one is willing to hire me. Like that's what that means. But people don't see it that way because, again, the narrative that's put out there about us is it's who was it? I cannot remember who said it, but they basically said that the way to prevent people from actually seeing the real change is instead of fixing the problem, pointing out someone to blame. Right. And for a lot of situations, we are the ones that you can blame. Social Security is the reason why you don't have enough money in your check at the end of the week, because you have to pay for Joe Lazy, who's sitting at home watching The Price is Right because he doesn't want to get a job. Right. That's the way it's explained to a lot of people. Yeah, right.
Right.
Right. Social Security needs to end. Social Security is the biggest problem in America. These old people should be living with their families. These disabled people should be living with their families. Right. So it's not, hey, let's fix the issue. Let's turn the blame on somebody else. So this is just going to be a continuation of that narrative. So unfortunately, until somebody can actually point out the hypocrisy in all this, it's still going to be the continued blame game.
Well, let's point it out. You want your student loans forgiven, which means that you are attending school to have a better lot in life, right?
Yeah.
You're trying to crawl out of the same mud that everybody else is.
It's exactly. Just,
you can't see where you're going, but you're in your final year of college. You're starting an internship.
Yep.
You're on that path. And people, so how do people say you're Joe Lazy when you just spent, 4 years learning to get a degree to get a real job that you're comfortable in? You know,
because they'll still call it Joe Lazy because, again, that when the narrative comes up, when the narrative comes up about disabled people, like I'm on disability, but I'm on disability, I'm taking it. That I'm taking my disadvantage, parlaying it as an advantage so that I can focus on school, because graduating with a degree with a 2.0 GPA is totally different as graduating with a 3.8, 3.9.
Right.
So with that advantage, I can actually go out and actually get a better job. But what people will still see is you're still on disability.
Mm-hmm.
You still are taking advantage of the system. You still are, in so many negative terms, you still are gaming the system. And I'm like, no, I'm legitimately disabled. I'm legitimately I'm on disability because my eye doctor, my optometrist, my ophthalmologist at the time told me, you need to stop doing what you're doing now. You need to stop. Like, go sit down. If you want to get back into work, you can, but you need to figure out what else you can do besides this. Because before this, I was working call centers. So I was looking at screens for 8-9 hours a day, getting eye fatigue, like burning my eyes out. And now I'm trying to work a job where I barely have to look at a screen at all. I'm doing just looking at people the entire day. So people don't understand that. It's easier to blame, to criticize, to hate than to actually learn, listen, and actually fight together for change.
That's right. That's right. You are looking to get off of the system.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if there's a real way to game this system. We're not allowed to have a savings account.
No.
I don't know how you manage to stay on disability and go to school, because most people would get kicked off for that. If you get married, you could lose your Medicare. There's all of these things to where, and there is so many stories about Social Security requesting money back from people.
Oh, no, I know. They've tried. They've done that before to me. I was a resident advisor, so I've had SS my entire life. I went to school. I stayed on campus, and I had an RA position, which you were given a stipend once a semester. So you were given $800 for 4 months worth of like being an RA, which to us was terrible because the things we had to do as an RA, you were basically an entire floor's parent. And at my school, you were literally an entire floor's parent.
$50 a week.
$50 a week would have been nice. The breakdown is, I think, $1.74. No. 68 cents an hour was the breakdown.
Wow. Like,
basically, it's the breakdown of 68 cents. And Social Security hit me with we heard you had a job. Therefore, we're taking. And I was like, yo, I made $864 a month every 4 months, a semester, while being in school. They were like, that's not a job. I'm like, no, it's not. But Social Security doesn't really care if it's a dollar more than If it's a dollar more than they think you should get, which is pretty much the benefit they give you, they will do all they can to try to snatch it from you. But that's because, and you're right with the you can't have a savings account. You can't have your spouse can't work or automatically that's gone. The only income we have in our family is that, which is why we live where we live right now. Like, that's the only income we have. So it's a lot of hardships. It's a lot of doing without, so that you can do. I always tell my wife, and this is how we just think about it now. You do what you have to do now so you can do what you want to do later.
Yes.
So that's what we're doing right now. We're doing what we have to do. And we know we're in the last 9 months of doing what we have to do after years of, you know, doing that. Mm-hmm. So it's fine. It's fine. Not everybody can do that. And I understand that. And I wish that was widely communicated. But again, the narrative of us being on easy street, the narrative of us getting everything handed to us, comes from people who have scammed the system, or on TV, that's the narrative of disability. It's someone who doesn't want to work anymore, who hates their job, who will fake a back injury, fake a neck injury, fake a car accident, whatever. You know, you've seen the show, the guy comes in with the crutches and the neck brace, and all of a sudden he needs disability. The second you turn his back, he's taking the neck brace off, he's dancing or whatever. And that's what people believe disability is. So long as that's all they see, that's all they'll know, because no one reads, they just watch.
Yeah, they just assume. I think on a previous episode, I called it a tradition of ignorance.
Yes.
People are taught to be ignorant about things so that they can eliminate them as a thought in their mind and go on to other things. They don't want to think about us, you know, so their automatic response is, oh, yeah, they gain the system. What about people on welfare? Oh, yeah, they're
gaining the system.
Yeah. They don't see the fact that we're working towards something, but it's really hard to do when. If you start a job, I'm going off topic here, but if you start a job, you don't have security in knowing how to do that job. You don't get extra time to train for that job. Like, I'm pretty private. You're pretty private. We like to learn things before people see us learning them. So it looks like we know how to do them. That's how we compensate for our visual impairity, you know?
Yes. And,
but the truth is that employer can fire you at any time for not being a fit. So if you start a job, get a paycheck, Social Security says, you don't need Social Security anymore. Then you get fired. Then what do you do?
You have to reapply all over again.
And that's the issue.
Yeah.
That's an issue. It's an issue.
And yeah, it is.
And if employers, we have people on the show that have jobs and they are great at their jobs. They've never missed a day and they still have to worry about losing their job to somebody not as good that can see.
Yeah.
And I think that's so weird. I think what's going to happen is more people are going to use the system to grow and become entrepreneurs that then go on to hire disabled people.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I'm hoping, that this 2 years of free college and student loan forgiveness opens this up for people like you and I to become entrepreneurs. And then, I mean, look at this, I'm a podcaster, and out of two shows, how many, 8 people, and they're all visually impaired. There's not one person that isn't visually impaired in this network. So I think it's just kind of cool. I don't know how to change the perspectives on it, that other people have to do it. And what I'm hoping is that these combined shows just tell people to stop. Just stop having an opinion. You don't need to have an opinion on my life. Maybe if you sat there and followed me around for a year and put on my shoes, you might have an opinion, but I'm not.
It's easier to judge than it is to learn.
Yeah, and
that's what it's basically become. Like, our whole culture has become, instead of learning about an issue, I take my opinion, that opinion becomes fact. Therefore, I don't have to learn about it because I'm right.
Right. As long as I don't tell anybody my opinion, they won't disagree with it.
I mean, not even that. I mean, look at what goes on around the rest of the world. Like that. I mean, think about other topics that are happening right now in the world. People are telling other people their opinion. They have no fact behind it. They have no education with it.
Right.
They haven't bothered to read anything other than headlines. And that's their opinion. And you better validate their opinion, or you're wrong, or you're stupid, or you're a snowflake, or whatever, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Right. The two things I was going to try and avoid, COVID and Afghanistan. Everybody on the planet has an opinion, but none of us are military experts or scientists. You know?
I always say, and this is ours, but this is just honest. If you got a D or an F in chemistry, you can't tell me a damn thing about a vaccination. And right. That's the problem I have with a lot of people is like, you don't understand basic science. And now you want to talk to me about vaccinations.
Right.
Okay. I think I'm going to leave it up to the people that, you know, did this for a living before the pandemic to kind of let me know what's with the vaccination.
Yeah. We were really lucky to have Dan Evans, an infectious disease scientist, to mm-hmm. come on once in a while and explain, you know, what the vaccine is and what it does and
yeah.
what you should look out for. And if you have what you, you know, and all of that information is right there. It's oil, salt, sugar, and inert COVID spikes. You breathe in more toxins when you walk around. So enough about that. I'm kind of curious as what it is to be a father in Philadelphia. You talk about Philadelphia a lot and, mm-hmm. You know, the area you're in, I'm not going to say it's not the unsafest, but you know, it worries you from time to time. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of curious. I mean, what is your area of Philadelphia like? What are the people missing?
So in my area of Philadelphia, it's a relatively poor neighborhood. So there's a lot of, when I look at it, I look at it through three lenses mainly. First is there's a lot of mental health concerns. I live in a heavily populated African-American community
right.
that mostly is dealing with the trauma and dealing with things like trauma, anxiety, depression, bipolar stress. Disorders, several other things, severe stress, and just the constant trauma of being African-American or being poor in the United States. Mm. Therefore, you see a number of coping mechanisms, which are very dangerous. Different ways to try to gain money, which are very, very ill-advised.
Right.
And because of that, it kind of becomes, depending on how involved you get with the neighborhood, survival of the fittest. Mm. And the problem with that is that instead of, again, I look at it as a microcosm of, if we stop fighting one another and start fighting the issues,
yes.
like then we could actually turn this neighborhood around. But it's a matter of convincing people of that. So as a blind and visually impaired individual, if I'm not out running an errand or going to mobility lessons or trying to go to internship or whatever, me and my family, we stay in the house. We stay to ourselves. We have some friends in the area. My brother lives across the street. But other than that, we don't really do too much out in the neighborhood because the mentality of the neighborhood, it to me is very toxic. And that's in like original toxic. Like if you take this mentality on, you can only go backward from here.
It's survival. It's not growing. It's just maintaining.
Yes. It's just maintaining. And in some areas it's barely maintaining.
That's what people don't realize. It's the frog in the water theory. Like you might be maintaining, but if you're maintaining, you're constantly losing ground because the world is going forward. If you're
right.
not,
you know? Right. Standing still is not really a thing.
Right.
And that's the thing that for so long, like we see people and, you know, people will ask us in certain ways, like, because again, you don't really see too many married couples with children in our neighborhoods. You see baby mothers with their children. You see baby fathers with their children, but you don't often see husband, wife, kids, like a nuclear family. And people always ask like, well, what did y'all do? You know, how was this like and things like that. And then it's kind of like you talk about like, okay, well, this is what we are, like this is what we do. And for some people like it, some people resent us for it. Progress, any visible progress in this neighborhood is almost seen as you're almost an enemy. Like, how dare you move forward? It's the crabs in the barrel thing.
Where the second gentrification type.
Yes.
Yeah.
The second you try to move forward, people want to pull you backward. But it's just a thing where if you're in this neighborhood, your goal for a lot of, cause we don't live too far from a nicer neighborhood. And that's usually the goal. So it's just like, that's what we always call it, looking east. Cause that's the direction of the next neighborhood. So it's like, we're always looking east. Like we want out of here. We want to move forward, but the way to do that is to not get caught up in so many things around here, because if you get caught up, you will ultimately lose. So being visually impaired around here is a bit of a challenge. Like I've made a video before where I said I don't use my cane at all in the complex, because one time I did and it almost made my family a target. So that was the end of that. You can think I'm crazy when I'm walking. You can think I'm on something when I'm walking. I don't care. So long as you just know, stay away from me and mine, that's fine. But it's a challenge. It's a challenge.
So it really is. What do you think some of the issues are? We've been discussing like food insecurity in urban areas and starting like 3D garden co-ops in rundown buildings. Mm-hmm. So is it a lack of nutrition? Is it a lack of education to where young people just they're not able to look east? They only see their block and their family, and they see hopelessness. I mean,
to me, it's a severe lack of education.
Okay. Would community centers help? Like,
no,
you know what I mean? Or is it just straight give them more to learn?
I think it's change who they're learning from. And this is just me and my personal opinion.
Oh, I love
it. I believe a lot of things in the Black culture teach you that this thing over here is success. And really, it's just teaching you to be more of a consumer and to put yourself further in debt. Like hip hop culture, which I'm not really a fan of, teaches you to be more of a consumer, to buy things, that this is the sign of wealth. This is the sign of status. You know, buy these sneakers, buy this car, buy this liquor, buy this thing. And all it is things like, if you ever noticed in a lot of hip hop, everything you buy, and this is just from taking economics courses and learning from older, I always grew up around older people. So I got to see the end of a thing before the beginning of it was advertised to me.
Right.
Everything that they teach you to buy depreciates in value.
Yep.
Car, the second you drive it off a lot, depreciates in value. Liquor does appreciate in value, but it all depends on what you buy, right? Like a 40 ounce is not going to appreciate in value ever in life, right?
Right.
Sneakers, they may, you know, they'll come back in style. So it'll be worth something until they come back in style. Then they're only worth what the sale price is. But it's never like, you know, get an education, learn to save money. It's never, you know, learn to invest. It's never the things that can help pull you out of a situation. It's always things that take you deeper in. And because our community is so consumed with that culture, so much so that anything that's seen outside of that is not considered Black. We have to be able to change not only what they're being educated with, but who's educated. Because a lot of the times, especially in Black culture, but you can see it throughout all cultures, who's doing the educating sometimes is the problem. Right. When you see certain news being the educator for certain things, that's problematic. When you see people getting their morals and values from certain television shows, that's a problem. When you get your morals and values from a music culture that they teach you how to that this is success when really they're doing the opposite, that's a problem. Those are things that I feel like in my community that needs to happen, because I feel like once you change the narrative of, you know, I can't do this, I will never get an opportunity to do this, no one will ever give me an opportunity to do this, to I can do this, it may take me longer, I may have to work harder at it, but I can do this, then I feel like that will be the catalyst for change in my community. Like I'm Black just like everybody in my community. I'm disabled, unlike many in my community. I'm poor just like everybody else in my community, but I'm going for a master's to change my family, right?
If I can
do this, then I believe anybody can do this.
So it sounds like the way to do that is to talk to children that are younger than the ones that are already in that other culture, right?
True.
So that sounds like parents need to raise their children with different goals. Like when you were talking, I thought of a line that somebody said, rich people are poor because they put their money into things that grow. Poor people spend their money on things they think rich people will buy.
Exactly.
So a rich, like I'll spend $500 on stock while somebody else will buy a diamond necklace.
Exactly.
Or a gold necklace.
Exactly.
And in the end, I'm going to have three times the money they have because their necklace is going to depreciate, get stolen, break, and then they're left with nothing.
Nothing.
Right. If we could teach children at a younger age before they learn societal norms, then maybe we could change the societal norms.
I agree with that. I think economics ought to be taught in elementary school. Start with beginning economics. Teach them. So here's something I've noticed, and I used to tell my friends about this all the time. There are two different commercials depending on what network you look at. Mm-hmm. On if you look at like Maury or BET or TV1, they do trade in your worthless jewelry for cash.
I never see those.
On Fox, on Reuters Network, it's trade in your worthless cash and buy gold, because gold appreciates in value while cash depends on the value of gold. So it's like I'm teaching two different concepts to two different marketplaces. And the thing that we don't realize is that if you don't learn how to manage, invest, save, grow your money the right way, like buying status symbols, like, yeah, you can buy I see it happen every year, and not saying this is normal, but I see it happen every year. People, when they get a large amount of money, whether it's a stimulus check, whether it's a tax refund, they'll go out and buy the most flashiest, shiniest thing.
New TV, and then, new car.
Right, new TV, clothes. New car, new clothes. They are the freshest thing on the block for about 3.5 weeks.
Right.
And then when the money is gone and there's nothing really left to show for it because the clothes become outdated, the shoes become outdated, the car gets dented and dinged, suddenly it's not as new anymore. The jewelry proves to be fake, or, you know, it's not worth as much as it used to be, or no one cares.
Or it gets stolen, lost, or gets broken. Stolen. Yeah.
Right.
Or you have to pawn it because that's the first thing you do when you're losing money.
Right. That's a lot of what you see happen. Ironically, it's what happens when you see with people with cars when they buy a car during tax season. You know, they buy it, they put a lot of money down, but can't finish paying it off, and then you lose it. Unfortunately, that becomes the norm. So imagine if you've seen a community take, okay, I got $15,000 as a tax return, for example, and invest it, and you just keep investing in it on a month-to-month basis for 5 years. That money will have multiplied so much, and you've already started yourself into a nice little nest egg in the future. Yeah. But again, we're not really taught that.
How do you take the moment to get the break to invest that money? Like, it seems like with poor people, our money is spent months before we get it.
It is.
Like the stimulus check, I always wondered, why are you giving me money to give to my landlord? Why doesn't my landlord apply when I say I can't pay? Mm. Why not just give it straight to them? Why are you giving me the money to give to them? Now I can't do anything with that money, but everybody thinks I had it. You know, like everybody's like, you got the money for your rent. I never touched it. The stimulus check was $600. I never touched that money. Mm-hmm. So Joe Biden saying, or anybody, Donald Trump, whoever, saying they gave me $600. It's a misnomer. I never got it. The people that collect for bills and creditors, they all got the money. You know,
see, here's the thing, though. I honestly, and this is my tinfoil hat moment. So I honestly don't believe they gave us that money to pay bills. I believe they gave us that money knowing that we would put it back into corporations and businesses.
Yep.
Because what a lot of people basically did with their money was they went out and bought things that they couldn't buy before. So now you've given me $1,400 of free money. Let me go buy. And again, speaking to my community, I've seen that happen. I've seen people pop up with brand new everything when the stimulus check came out. And it's just like, hadn't paid rent. People hadn't paid rent in months. People hadn't paid rent. Like, you know, that's why so many people, and it's sad, but it's true. When the eviction moratorium expires and so many people move out, they had to get out because the money that they were given for rent or even rental assistance, because there are rental assistance programs that will pay your rent, but they give, if they can't reach your landlord, they'll give you the money.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people took that money instead of paying their landlords, decided that they were going to continue to spend. We have a very consumer driven country where buying things is the proof of doing well. If your money's all invisible, say you have $1 million and you have the majority of it invested in stocks. You may have a house, but it's not a real big, like it's not a mansion, right?
Right.
You have a car. It's functional, that's not seen as wealthy, right? Despite the fact that you have $1 million, despite the fact that your money is literally growing while you sleep,
right?
It's not seen as wealthy, right? But if you flip it on the other, if you put it on its head and everything that you see is visible, oh, that person is wealthy, even though they have nothing left in their bank account, mm-hmm. that's considered wealthy.
Right. That's so funny, because that's the poor people like to look rich and rich people try to look poor for that reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it Bill Gates? I believe Bill Gates is the one that I think he still gets his hair cut at like Supercuts or something like that. So like he still gets his hair cut at Supercuts. Like he doesn't put a whole lot into his financial, like
right.
his exterior, but he's still one of the richest people on earth.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, that if you learn, like if you still buy your sneakers at Walmart, not saying that all of his sneakers are bought at Walmart, he has probably nice things, but like I guarantee you he's not spending a fortune on those kind of things.
Right. When last year when there was a toilet paper shortage, my friend was like, I just went out and spent $100 on toilet paper. And I was like, So I put $100 into stocks.
Yeah.
I bought Snapchat and GE, American Steel, you know, and now, I mean, I got rid of the GE and now I picked up a Southwest Airlines because COVID is going to end. Mm-hmm. I'm up to $600 in 1 year just from $100. And oh, wow. I could invest another $100. You know what I mean? And
can I ask you about that when we get done this pod? Because I've been wanting to do that for the longest time. It's just I hear a lot of people talk about it, investing, but like it's always like the YouTuber who seems like he gets a commission if you invest in his right. thing, instead of like actually telling me like this is what you do. Because honestly, my thought was, why not invest in everywhere you shop, right? So if you right. shop at Walmart, then you feel good for, you know, shopping at Walmart, because you right. know their bottom line improves your bottom line, right?
Exactly. So,
like if I invest in everything I shop in, then I don't feel bad for spending my money, because I know as they turn a profit, I'm turning a profit.
That's right. Believe me, I bought Snapchat 5 shares at $8. Mm-hmm. They're $73 right now, and they've been as high as 76. Wow. And wow. that was because the girl I was dating at the time was sitting in bed next to me, always on Snapchat. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I guess I'm going to get Snapchat because she uses it. And so I started using it. Now I can promote it on the show and be like, get Snapchat, because that increases mine, you know?
Can you imagine if you had shares in Zoom pre-pandemic?
Right. That's my point. Oh, so that's what investing is looking at the future and saying, like, I bought GE knowing that COVID would be over. Planes would need parts.
Yeah.
GE makes the engines.
That is actually very smart.
Right. But then GE bought my shares out from under me. And wow. so I invested that in Southwest Airlines, going, well, planes are going to be back in, right? And
people are going to want to travel all over again. Right. Yeah.
And they're not going to be using United Airlines and American Airlines. You know, they're going to be using Frontier. They're going to be using Southwest. So I don't know. That's what I did with that. But it's just, it's looking at the future and looking at your life and saying, what do I use and what do most people use? You know?
Yeah.
I don't invest in cannabis. I think that's stupid, you know, but, or crypto. Those are the two things I say stay away from, because they go up and then they go back down, but they right. do it on news stories. Somebody will say, guess what? People are smoking more weed. And then everybody goes on the Robin Hood app.
Yeah,
right. But that's it. That's the problem. And the same with crypto. I heard Ezra talk about it, and my roommate talked about the Dogecoin, and I would never invest in something that doesn't. It's like buying a condo. You're buying the air between the walls. You know? I just want to ask really quickly, what is it like to be in a family of inter-disabled situations?
It's a challenge. So first for me and my kids, Ava, I think, is the only one that has absolutely nothing going on to our knowledge so far. Then again, she's only 6 months, so to be determined.
Right, right.
But for everybody else, it's kind of like learning the accommodations that are needed for each and every person and trying to work that out as a team.
Yeah.
Sometimes it can be, you know, you think about you and your disability first, but then you have to take a step back, like, hey, I'm not the only one struggling in this situation right now.
Right.
We're all struggling in one form or another, what works for us so that we can succeed, not for what everybody else thinks. Because if you take like a situation where you're in Walmart, I remember with my oldest, she would have meltdowns in Walmart because like her sensory overload with her autism was like, okay, this is enough. Mm-hmm. You know, the sounds, the sights, all of this is enough. And she would have a meltdown and my wife's back would be bothering her because she has sciatica and my eyes, I'm trying to see where the heck I'm going.
Yeah.
And we're all like, you know, this is nuts. And we're like, you know, well, you figure it out. No, you figure it out.
Right.
No, you figure it. And it's just like, you try to pull everything to the side and go, hey, it's not us versus, it's like, it's not you versus me. It's us versus the situation.
Right.
So let's figure out what we need to do to get through this and get out of here. So yeah. It took us a while to actually get there. It was tough at first, but we got there. Like we learned to like, hey, this is what we need to do. We can't be in here long because of sensory overload for Stella. I need verbal cues. I had to get my cane because at that point I didn't have my cane before. I had to get a cane. If for no other reason at that point, it was just, this is an indicator to let people know, like, I'm not trying to bulldoze over an aisle on purpose.
Right,
like, this is
right,
just
right.
What's happening. Right. So that took the pressure off my wife for sight guiding. Because when people seen the cane, it was like, oh, this is what's happening with him. And then my wife, she gets like the motorized cart so she can sit down. So we learned to work this as a team so that like, even if it looks like a group of like, what happened here?
Right, right.
It's still, you know, it's us doing this together. We got this. We can get through this. And, you know, don't worry about what anybody else thinks. So it's hard at first. And that learning curve comes with literally everything,
mm-hmm.
whether it's going to the store, whether it's getting on public transportation with a stroller and my daughter and her nonverbal cues.
Right.
And, you know, it's a lot. So it's just learning to work as a team. As an interable family, it's kind of working as a team.
That's life. That's marriage. That's everything. How do you?
It is.
But you know, you mentioned something that I think everybody deals with, and you might be able to help. How do you deal with the embarrassment in the moment? Like, people are great 99% of the time, but when there's a situation, they seem to fall apart. And
yeah.
that embarrassing moment is the 1% of life that you need to be an adult in.
Yeah.
And how do you, if you could tell anybody how to just avoid the embarrassment and deal with the situation, that might help a lot of people.
I mean, you're going, unfortunately, with this challenge, you're going to face embarrassment. Like it's going to happen, whether you want it to or not. Because in an interabled family, somebody is going to have something where, like my wife's back will lock up, for example.
Right.
And it's just like she can't move, but the way she's standing looks awkward, and people are like, you know, what did he, like, I've literally had people walk past me with my cane, my wife just bent over, kind of in pain. What did he do to her?
Right.
I didn't do anything. Like this is just. You know, this is what she's experiencing at the moment.
Right.
Or my daughter will just have an outburst and it looks like we're trying to kidnap her. Like,
right.
She doesn't want to cross the street, or she just doesn't want to, like, when her legs get tired, her first thing is she wants me to pick her up and carry her everywhere.
Right.
And like, when you can't do that downtown with a cane, you know, and you're in the middle of like Broad Street, which is like a five lane street.
Right.
That runs up and down Philly. If you're in the middle of the street and she's having a meltdown in the middle of the street for all of Broad Street to see, you know, unfortunately, those moments are going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like if I walk into something or trip down a set of steps, like my wife has to now look as everyone else laughs, like you're going to face those moments. If you're with somebody and you realize it doesn't really matter what everybody else thinks,
right?
Like people are going to have opinions on everything. And if you live and die with everyone else's opinion, you're going to be a miserable person. So long as the person that you're with is, hey, I've got your back. We're a team.
Right.
Let's do this together. Then it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter. Because again, living and dying on people's laughter or people's opinions, they're laughing at you in that moment because they're not having an embarrassing moment at that
point, right?
The moment they have an embarrassing moment, they want compassion. Just like at the moment that you're having an embarrassing moment, you want compassion. So just realize it's not their moment yet, but they have them just like you do.
Mm.
It may not look exactly like yours does, but they have theirs too.
Oh, of course they do. I think love is a commitment. Love is an illusion of adoring the commitment you have. So I think like in a relationship, it's those times of embarrassment when you know you got the right partner, right? Because you're in it together. They didn't just walk away on you and leave you alone in that situation. They were like, I'm going to stay in the embarrassment and we're going to help fix it together. How do you deal with somebody intentionally or unintentionally making fun of your child. Because that would make me want to slaughter a bitch. You know what I mean?
So I realized that, like, for the most part, whenever my daughter's on camera, whenever my oldest was on camera, I'm holding her or I'm sitting next to her or I'm basically prompting her, right? A lot of what's edited out is her nonverbal cues.
Okay.
Her, because she's in the middle of the autism
spectrum. Okay.
So she can say words, she can parrot back to you.
Right.
But like she also has like a humming and a other noise
yeah.
in the background that people don't necessarily understand.
I thought that was adorable though, because it's just freedom. It's her version of freedom, right?
It is. But a lot of people, because again, education, just like for us, right? The stereotypical blind person is completely helpless or, you know, wears the glasses in the camera mm-hmm. or, you know, the stereotypical autism person on TV is a person with Asperger's syndrome, who's high functioning, who's
savant.
Yeah. If you think Sheldon Cooper from The Big Bang
Theory, right.
He wasn't out and outright said that he was autistic, but a lot of his mannerisms and things were those of autism.
Right.
So that's a lot of times when people think autism, that's what they think. They don't think about the other portions of the spectrum. Where there's the beginning where there's barely any functionability at all, mm-hmm. or the middle where my daughter is, where there's some functioning,
right.
but there's not a whole lot. So I know that people don't understand that, and that's fine. If I snap out, then I lose a moment to educate. And I understand that there are going to be people who are going to make fun because they're trolls. That's fine. I could obliterate that really quick.
Right.
But for the people I know, like, you just don't know, and you're like, you're curious about it, I'll tell you, like, hey, that's my daughter. Like, she makes noises, but a lot of times, like that day, I didn't even know she was in the room.
But that means she's happy. Snuck in behind that me. Means she's happy.
She is.
That's right.
That's one of her happy noises.
Right.
Okay. So, and whenever she's around me, she does that a lot, which is why I can't usually, like, I've scrapped so many videos because I start filming a video and my daughter just, she picks up with her noise.
Uh huh.
So it is what it is. It's totally fine.
It is.
If one thing that kind of bothers me on TikTok, and this is just, again, being honest, when I see people snap out about a genuine question, I understand the troll question. Mm-hmm. When somebody snaps out on a genuine question, whether they're tired of answering, whether they've answered it 1,000 times, like, look, I know for a fact I've made 600 videos and I know no one's going to scroll back through 600 videos to look for the specific question
right.
that they asked. Right.
Good point.
So if someone genuinely wants to know, because part of education is repetition. Think how many times in school someone went over the multiplication tables with you before you got it.
Right.
Think about how many times people go over, like, that's part of teaching. If you want to be on here to educate, educating is teaching. Teaching is repetition.
Repetition.
So, right. So long as people want to genuinely know, I will repeat myself. Right. So with my daughter, I've answered that question before because someone has asked before, like, what is that note? I remember it was like my third or fourth video. I had my Black Panther helmet on. and I was making a joke about, putting on, because it was at the beginning of like where they wanted you to put on masks. And I was like, hey, does this work as an acceptable mask? And I had like my Black Panther
right.
like toy helmet on. But my daughter was also humming in the background.
Aww.
And people were like, you know, what the hell is that? And I was like, that's my daughter. You know, she makes noises from time to time. It's totally fine.
Right.
And I think I've done it a couple other times, but it's fine. Education is repetition. If you're not willing to teach, then if you're not willing to repeat yourself, then you're not really willing to teach.
Right. You know what's fascinating about these two subjects, autism and visual impairments? Literally everyone on the planet is on those two spectrums. You know what I mean? If you're not 20, I mean, who said 2020 was perfect vision, right?
Yeah, and that's true.
So it's fascinating to me that nobody takes their own accountability and says, well, I wear glasses, I'm on the spectrum, and then therefore have compassion, right?
right.
They're so worried about being unique and separating themselves that they don't realize that they're just like us, the people they're making fun of, the people they're dismissing, you know?
That's very true.
And I loved listening to your daughter hum. If we weren't like in the middle of a recording, I would have just wanted more of that. I mean, look at Ava. How fucking lucky are you right now? You know, I know your wife gives you a hard time, but you have like a great, loyal, dependable wife, right?
I do.
And
I do.
You have amazing kids. Look at that. And you're one of the luckiest people on the planet. So, I mean, despite your disability. And I think that's what's amazing, is that people don't think we can have a life with disability. And you are a nuclear family that's, like you said, above the average in your area. And
And that's one of the things that I like about our community. If you have it, show it. Like, I love the fact, like, I'm pretty sure no one ever thought that a bunch of blind spectrum individuals could be doing a podcast,
right?
Or could even do a podcast, right?
Right.
That's why I want this one to take off so much, because
me too.
When you get to a larger audience, when you get in front of a larger audience and show them, like, we're capable. We've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
We know how to do this thing, and we can talk seriously on issues that actually matter. Mm-hmm. Then you can actually begin to change the narrative in America, in our world, about, hey, this is what we can or can't do. TikTok is a nice start, but it's by no means, the height that we need to be at, right?
Right.
We want to be in front of, like, if we could get this on even like television, that would be incredible. But,
mm-hmm.
Because God knows proper representation of this of the blind spectrum needs to be seen on television. So.
I agree. They always talk about disabled. Like, I would love to be a newscaster, but I can't read the teleprompter like they do. There's like, so I would like to be in the audio engineering department, you know, like, yeah. I think there's stuff, but I want to intern. I can't take a job, lose my stuff.
Right.
While I'm learning, but I have the luxury of being able to intern for months and learn before I'm offered a job. So I think there's ways that they can really go about helping us adapt to our surroundings, because once a blind person is adapted to their surroundings, they're gold. Like, right? Like, there's nothing I can't do in my surroundings. In fact, so much so that people say he's not really blind, because I'm not bumping into walls in my own location. But if you
that's because I have the location completely memorized.
Right. Yeah. But if you bring me to another house, I'm bumping into everything and I can't find the bathroom. I might have just peed in your bed, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Well, that's the thing I like about graduate school. Graduate school, that whole interning you said for months before. That's what graduate school does for you. Like, you do, like, it's not like high school or college level interning where, like, you're just shuffling papers, or you're doing the job in graduate school interning.
I like that.
You're just not getting paid for it, because they're educating you and they're like, they're slowly dipping you into the environment so that you can learn, while you're going. So that way, when you're ready to step into the environment, A, you get to count it as job experience.
Yeah.
And B, you know, you already are familiar, no matter, like, if I do it at channel 6, channel 3, channel 10, I'm familiar with what I need to do.
Yep. That's right. It's a basic job that you've already had the time to learn it without the stress of possibly losing the only income you have.
Yes.
Yeah. I like this. I think internships might be the way to go for disabled people, especially visually impaired people. You know, this is
cool. Just a matter. It's a matter of getting
a foot.
Because I made a video about this yesterday. It's a matter of getting corporations and agencies and companies to actually take a chance on you without like discriminating against you because your disabilities. Like yesterday, I talked about the ADA and the problems with the penalties of the ADA.
Yeah.
Smaller corporations, like a mom and pop, like the mom and pop establishment, the ADA is a good deterrent. But for like Walmart, McDonald's, Target, it's not really a real punishment. It's more like a slap on the wrist.
Yeah. Yes, I've been saying it since 2016, when the first thing the Senate did with Trump was gut the ADA when it came to developers. You know, no more little dinging at every floor, no more necessary ramps, stupid things like that. And so I've been saying restore it and then improve it. And then the ADA will be something. But my problem is we're all complaining, 49 million people asking for different things. What are we going to ask for when they finally hear us? You know what I mean? That's my worry. So I'm looking for people that will tell me what they need so I can form some sort of paper that I can send. Because when Joe Biden says, fine, I'll be on your show, I want to be like, cool. I know
this, is what,
is what we want.
This is a concise list of what we need.
Right. So
So from experience, I've realized that there's, if you ask, 500 people that will give you 500 answers.
Right.
No one want to concede, like, hey, can we just prioritize these? What's number one that we can get out of the way? And then when number one comes out of the way and they see how successful it is and the positive PR and all those things, we can move to number two, we can move to number three. Problem is getting people to agree to number one because everyone wants to be right.
I think if you ask people five things they need, I think almost everybody will mention one of those things.
Yeah.
I think there'll be a combination. I think there's something so simple that all of us can use it, like clean, clear sidewalks, right?
Yeah. Like that would be helpful.
Right. You're running into trees. Somebody can't get on the, you know, sidewalk because it's chipped. People parking in the crosswalks, all this stuff. We need a clear path. All of us, all disabled people, you know,
or at least I don't know if you've ever heard of there's this technology by a company called WeWalk. And WeWalk is basically an attachment you add to a cane.
Wow.
That can not only tell you what's in front of you, but it can tell you what's above you. So, like, if it's low-hanging branches,
yes.
If it's like a car, like, but it's incredibly expensive. It's like $3,500, which everything that's really an improvement is like $3,500 apparently.
Yeah.
But if you could offer that as if you could contract out and offer that free for individuals who need at least as a start,
right?
Like, I think that would be something that would be a nice improvement, at least to help with navigations, or at least require truncated domes on every corner,
right?
So that way we can pick that up with our canes, or at least the white lines that when you cross the street, make sure that that's on every street corner.
And so that in way every we city. Can
actually in every city. That way we're able to cross without issue.
Right.
Like that. Those are things that you could do.
Standardized our assistance. That would be nice.
Yes. And that's something you can actually put. Can't you package that into infrastructure?
That would be great. And I wish Joe Biden had talked to disabled people instead of not.
yeah.
Because disabled people, when they get in front of people like that, they're like, give me money, 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 money. We'll do with it what we want. No, I want a standardized governmental regulation that says the crosswalk in Chicago is going to look like the crosswalk in Philly, you know?
Yeah.
That would.
Is there a committee at all that handles that?
I know there's a committee that handles SSI, Social Security Disability, but I don't know if anybody does that. I'm going to have to look into that. That's awesome.
National Committee on Accessibility, because right. I guarantee you that's something you could pitch.
Yes.
That's positive. And I'm willing, if we can pitch that together if you want.
I love it.
I think that would actually be a great idea.
Yeah. To
pitch a National Committee on Accessibility. That way you can actually, and you have a little bit from each, and you get some people from the autism community,
yes.
You get some from the deaf community, blind community, the, just various communities, and like this is what we need to improve.
Yeah, a citizen panel of like 20 people that advises, that would be awesome.
Yes,
I love how we get to solutions on the show. Thank you everybody for listening to Public Access America. Please check out Inspirations Beyond Disabilities. It is an awesome show, as you can tell. Jay is a great person. We have Dave, we have Ezric, we have Kai, we have Brittany, we have Shai, and we have guests coming in all the time for having great discussions. So thank you for listening. Don't forget you can find Jay, the Baritone Blurred, on TikTok and Instagram, Baritone Blurred on Twitter. I say Twitter because you're not on Twitter very much, but you,
not often, no.
You are the TikTok daddy. Like people call you TikTok dad, you know, so they have to follow you on TikTok. Thanks for being here, Jay.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, I love it.
To those who would tear the world down, we will defeat you.
This is our moment.
This is our time.
To those who seek peace and security, we support you.
Yes, we can.
And to all those who have wondered if America's beacon still burns as bright tonight,
place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life.
Ask not.
Yes, we can.
What your country can do for you.
I have a dream.
ask what you can do to your country.
My poor little children.
Yes, we can.
One day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression.
In this lifetime, you don't have to prove nothing to nobody except yourself.
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward.
That's how winning is done.
Welcome, welcome. To Publish Access America.
Yes, we can.
Sunday live streams on YouTube.
I wanted to run out of that tunnel for my dad.
On Twitter.
Prove what?
Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Smart Radio, Public, and Spotify.
Yes, we can.
Public Access America, history in the making.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.